This podcast is brought to you by Dynapack.
Welcome to part one of the Asphalt Pro Magazine podcast mini-series for mental health wellness and suicide prevention. I'm magazine editor Sandy Lender and your host for this mini-series. In this three-part podcast, we'll explore ideas for incorporating a mental health wellness component in your safety program. Asphalt Pro is honored to expand the conversation around this important topic and to bring Ajax Paving's Vince Hafley to the podcast for that purpose. Let's begin part one of this three-part podcast, getting a feel for what Vince has seen in the asphalt subset of the construction industry regarding suicide in construction and the atmosphere around mental health wellness. I'd like to start talking specifically about breaking down barriers to the conversation. And that's, you know, kind of in our sector of the industry. Can you give our audience a feel for why it was initially difficult for members of the asphalt community to talk about mental health?
I think it's difficult for a lot of them to talk about it because they're not aware that there's a problem. So until you can acknowledge that there's a problem, it's difficult to have the conversations. And my research that I've been doing, I targeted executives, and I had to modify my research question because originally I thought I would get stories from them about things they're doing, but the stories I got from them was, wow, I didn't know there was a problem. I didn't know there was anything wrong. So I modified my research now to where I'm actually targeting some companies in different segments of the industry that have put programs in place and trying to build a best practices out of that, if you will. So back to your question, it was difficult to have a conversation because most people don't know there's an issue. And generally when I have opened the door with them, the conversations become very easy.
Now, initially, did you see any reluctance in those, the CEOs and the executives that you went to? Did you see any reluctance to talking about mental health or suicide prevention? Or was it just that we didn't know there was a problem?
Well, there's always going to be some that are reluctant, right?
Yes.
The companies that say, hey, people are our most important asset, they all say that, right? I've never heard a contractor not say that, hey, our people are our most important asset. But what I ask a lot of these men are, and ladies, are they really your most important asset, or do you just say that you're most important asset because that makes you feel good? When you ask them, how are you doing, are you really asking them how they are doing? And our organization, mental health was never discussed. It's kind of a taboo topic. And when we began addressing it is when I stood in front of 400 people at our safety day and said, we're going to talk about this. It's going to become part of our culture. We're going to even elevate our culture more. We've always cared about our people, but maybe we really didn't care either. We said it because it feels good. I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek. When I said that we were going to begin addressing it, I immediately, within hours of that meeting, began receiving emails, telephone calls, and text messages saying thank you, saying I'm going to go get some help, saying, wow, I can suddenly talk about it. The conversation has to begin at the top and come down. It can't begin at the paving foreman level. Because the paving foreman, he's living in the culture that was created by the executives. Until the executives say we're going to address and change our culture, the culture will remain status quo.
You know, I think what we want to do with this is change the status quo. So how do we make it so that the paving foreman can come forward and can be the person who speaks up?
I think you did what we did at my company. I stood in front of everyone and said we would do it. And when I did that, again, the message came in from people thanking me. And within hours of that meeting ending, a project manager that was riding with the project superintendent back to Tampa, they had a conversation about needing some help. So the project manager initiated the conversation because he said, "Hey, I think you've been struggling for a long time. I just didn't know what to do about it. But now I feel like I can ask you this." And so he did. And that superintendent went and got some help, of which the company paid for. And 6 months later at the mid-year boot camp, he said, "I want you to know that what you did in January saved both my career and saved my personal life." We had to pull that gentleman off of a job in downtown Tampa where he was having a breakdown, if you will, yelling at someone in a car, confrontational, and had stopped traffic. He's got help. People know that he's gotten help because it's open. He chose to tell people. We don't publicize it. That was his decision. But it just begins the conversation of the conversation. Then the first conversation is the most difficult. They get easier after that.
So how, over the past few years, have you seen, you know, that, I guess, that resistance to talking about mental health, how have you seen that changing over the past couple of years, you know, that you've been doing your work?
Well, my research has been over about the last year and a half.
Okay.
The really of digging into this is like month 13, maybe.
Okay.
But in 13, I've talked about it in Wales to people. I've been to Indiana, Alabama, Iowa, Oklahoma, Illinois next week. The people, once they hear the numbers, they're shocked about the numbers. They're shocked at the ranking of our industry. Our industry being the second highest in the U.S. And when you combine mining extraction with construction, we're actually the highest sector in the U.S. So once they know that, you get the question, what do we do? What's the next step? What does it look like? Where do we go? Not from everybody, but I've not been laughed off of any stages. I can tell you that the email I received about the talk last week in Alabama from Mel there, the association director, he said, in 20 years, I've never heard an audience be that quiet. And in 20 years, I've never seen a speaker have a standing ovation. He also shared with me that he had a conversation with a business owner later that evening that said, that talk was very uncomfortable. It was difficult to listen to. I don't know anyone this has ever happened to. One of his employees that was with him said, "What if I went to tell you that I sat on our property a few years ago going through a divorce with a gun inside my vehicle contemplating what I was going to do?" Suddenly now the owner knew someone, and he didn't before that. And he found out because of the conversation. So we just have to keep the conversations going, and the change will happen.
And these guys out there, they need this.
I've not been to a place where I've given a talk yet that I've not sat with an adult male, typically the baby boomer males, where they've not sat and shed tears and wanted to tell the stories and their lives.
Well, it's important. We've got to help these people. Yeah. So I want to ask you, about, and you said, you know, he said the conversation was uncomfortable. And so what kind of arc are you seeing in that comfort level? Are you seeing more people show more comfort in discussing this, more willingness to discuss mental health, wellness of their employees?
I guess I run in two different circles. I've kind of got this national circle I've been running in, so it's hitting places to where the topic never hit before. So there, it's kind of shock and awe. I tell people that, hey, I told my story July 16th of 2021 to 16 people. And my story is that in 07, I was going to take my life. And for 14 years, I never shared that with anyone. Three people knew, my ex-wife now and my son. And I tell people that as I told my story to the 16 people in that room, it was just silence. You could have heard a feather hit the floor. There was no conversation. There was no dialect. There was just simply me talking. I wasn't preaching. I was just talking. And when I was done, they all got up and they left. Nobody said, hey, if you ever need anything, let me know. Call me if you need someone to talk to. And I tell people that I don't hold any ill feelings against any of them. I get it. For 14 years, I couldn't talk about it. So how could I expect them to talk about it after 4 minutes? But now some of those people of that 16 are involved in organizing some suicide walks that were done. One gentleman in our office that he's one door down, and until we begin having a conversation, I never knew his father took his life. The gentleman two doors to the left, I never knew that he lost several military buddies to suicide, and he also lost a family member to suicide. I never knew the lady down at the other end of the hall, one stop, her mother, and had lost several family members. So once we began having the conversation, I mean, that's the other circle I run in, my intimate one, if you will. But then we began organizing the statewide walk in Florida, where we brought in Hubbard Construction, we brought in Duval Asphalt, CWR Contracting, the South Florida Engineers, the Des Moines Group, the Asphalt Group. And in our first meeting in that group, the conversations weren't that deep and that meaningful. 5 or 6 months now into the walk, 5 or 6 months now into having biweekly meetings, the conversations become easier and people are more energized and excited about what they're doing. So, again, the conversation the first time are going to be, I've done some TEDx talks and I say the conversations are going to be awkward. The conversations are going to have silence, period, what I call awkward silence. And when you're having these conversations with people, don't think you have to make jokes to make them feel comfortable. Don't think you have to lead the conversation. Sometimes the conversation will be short and you'll move on. Sometimes the people have to process the data. So don't think the first time you approach someone or a company or a CEO, or once a CEO does it, the first time he begins to approach his paving foreman, that they may immediately be on board. This is a deep, dark subject that people need to be provided time to absorb and to think about and take it in and go home and have a conversation with their wife or go to their pastor on Sunday or go to a buddy that you're playing golf with and have the conversation. You just need to allow people to process it and work through their emotions and feelings. And when I've seen people do that, I've not seen any, well, I shouldn't say that. I have seen a couple people that are still against it. But I would tell you the majority of the people say, what can I do? Where do we go from here?
So what kind of hope does that give you in that shift toward more people wanting to get active, more people wanting to do stuff?
I'm very hopeful. The proclamation I did was on suicide, right? If I could go back and rewrite the proclamation now, it would probably be more on mental health. Because the talks I've been giving a lot really hinge on mental health. My research was on suicide, so it was natural that the proclamation was on suicide. But I'm trying to educate people more now in talks I'm giving that, do you want the man today that walked out of his house, or lady, and was told, hey, when you get home today, I won't be here with the kids. Or, hey, I just learned that my mother has breast cancer. I mean, whatever it may be. That person at that point is struggling mentally, right? So he shows up at the job site, you have your morning huddle, and you say, hey guys, let's all make sure we're wearing our hard hats, and we have our hearing protection in, we're wearing our safety glasses, and you got your steel-toed boots on. None of that will protect the individuals around him from what he could possibly do with an excavator, or what he could possibly do with a crane, or what he could do with a stop-go paddle flagging traffic in the road. If you can put all the PPE in the world you want on him, but if he's not mentally in the game, you're putting him and everyone around him at risk. So the mental health aspect of it is important. And so in this industry, we're very safety-oriented, right? So I'm hopeful that when people understand that there's a link between the mental and the physical, and the mental is probably more powerful than the physical, that that will help us move the needle. So that's where my hope comes from.
Nice. Very good. Well, there's talk about presenteeism in all levels of work. I mean, you talk about presenteeism in corporate America when people are coming to work and they're not quite in the game and you're not getting your full productivity out of them. But presenteeism in our industry is downright dangerous. So you have, like you say, you have an individual, if he shows up to work and you don't know that, you know, his wife has said, I'm not going to be home when you get home tonight. You don't realize that you have a worker here who's not in the game. You have a worker who's present, but could cause an accident. And you're not going to know that unless you ask.
You're not going to know that unless you create a culture to where he's allowed to say it and you don't have to ask.
Now, you mentioned the proclamation just a moment ago. Tell the audience a little bit about the Suicide and Construction Awareness Proclamation. Like, what motivated you to make this proclamation, and how did that come about?
What motivated me? Hey, I'm a dreamer, I guess, is the first piece. The true motivation came from the research I'm doing. Hey, the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, they all have their numbers. They all have the research that's been done about alcoholism and opioids and stressful and work environments and all of that. Those are causes, but I don't think that's the cause. So that's why I wanted to do the proclamation. What I'm finding in my research is, I think the cause is that we have company leaders that haven't accepted that there's a problem. So we can't fix the guy that's struggling financially. We can't fix the guy that may be drinking excessively because he's been injured until we create an environment to where people can express those feelings and no concerns. Once a worker can go to his boss, who had gone to his boss, who had gone to the owner, so again, it's the top down, and he can say, hey, you know what? I think I need some alcohol treatment. And the company says, God, I love you told me that. Let's do it. Let's fix it. Let's help you. So the proclamation was my way of getting industry leaders. And the leaders were all over the board. Some people asked me, why did you pick the people you picked? Because I had engineers, I had equipment manufacturers, I had national construction organizations, I had state of Florida construction organizations, I had government officials from the Department of Transportation, I had trade association leaders from ARTBA and from NUCA and different places. My goal from the proclamation is that they're going to go back to their organizations. I was just at the NUCA, their meeting here 2 hours ago. He wanted me to come in because all the state directors were there, so I could talk to them to filter the word down. So the goal of the proclamation is to get the leaders in our industry to acknowledge there's a problem, to talk about the problem, so that they can then get their subsector of the contractors that work under NUCA and the contractor that work under ARTBA. Those owners will then talk to their people and they will transform their cultures. So that I have a bad habit of going all the way to the top and going backwards. So I went to what I thought was the top to get them to buy in. I think how powerful would it be if we could get the Association of Equipment Manufacturers to rewrite their manuals a little bit. When you buy a piece of equipment, it got all the safety in there about seat belts and operational safety and everything. I mean, I talked to Jamie Roush with this general manager of Dynapack America. I said, what if every piece of equipment you sold came with four toolbox talks about mental health? So when you got the piece of equipment and you got it, there was a toolbox talk that came with it. I said, what if we could get AEM to say, hey, we're going to change and we're going to get all manufacturers to have something in there, not only about seatbelts, but something in there about mental health, about mentally making sure the guy's there. So that's why I had the equipment manufacturer there. I wanted the engineer there because I think they're out on the jobs inspecting and watching our people, and they can probably see changes in people more readily than maybe we can. So that's why I wanted the engineers there. The DOT, when they heard I was doing this in Florida, they actually reached out to me. They said, we have a suicide problem. They said, I'm sure you've heard of all the deaths off the Skyway Bridge. So we want to get involved and see how maybe we could change that. So a long answer to you, why did I want the proclamation? Because I wanted to change it from the top down, and I think all the people that are in there can make a huge national impact.
It's been a pleasure talking with Vince Haefeli today. I hope everyone listening in has picked up something they can use in their companies to expand the conversation around mental health wellness and suicide prevention. I want to encourage you again to follow Vince on LinkedIn. You can find his company online at www.ajaxpaving.com or on Facebook at Ajax Paving Industries of Florida. Be sure to visit theasphaltpro.com/suicideprevention to read and sign his Suicide in Construction Awareness Proclamation. If you or a colleague needs immediate help, the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline has licensed counselors standing by at all times to speak with you. Please call or text 988. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you for your willingness to share this podcast and conversation with others.